For the first time since 1998, McLaren are Constructors' Champions again. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Back when their driving pair was Mika Hakkinen and David Coulthard. Man, doesn't time fly. Welcome to episode 558 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us as ever. And just like that, the 2024 Formula One season is over.
Thank God.
We did it, everybody!
I don't think I've ever been so happy for a motorsports season to end.
We did it, Reddit. We did it. We survived.
Except, of course, of Formula E, which we don't really cover on the show anymore. But I have to say, why can't Pascal Wehrlein just crash normally?
It's impossible. He doesn't. As we Brits
would say, no measures.
As we Brits would say, he just does not have a normal one. He has to be launched sideways into a wall again. Like, if I had a pound for every time Pascal Wehrlein was flipped and launched into a wall upside down, I'd have £3, which isn't a lot, but it can buy me a chicken burger at my local Sam's.
There you go.
It's useful. It's useful. I'll keep it brief. That shit was a car crash in Formula E. Multiple car crashes. Attack mode looks fun, though. All of a sudden, we're now going to make these cars go really, really quick. That'll solve all the problems. It doesn't. Not really. If anything, seeing Taylor Barnard have like 5% more energy and then not be able to pass anybody was just everything I still can't stand about Formula E.
I'm getting this from our editor and not chief that we've hit our allotted Formula E time for the year.
Cool. Just a bailout in time to talk about Mitch Evans winning the race and inevitably giving Dre Harrison hope that this will be his year.
We're not doing this again. No, I've suffered perfect, enough.
Perfect in the Gen 3 Evo era.
And he won from last on the grid. The most Mitch Evans thing possible to win, the first person ever to win a Formula race from the last spot on the grid. Because Mitch brud again, and he brud all over these hoes. And yes, he's now the joint all-time wins leader in Formula E history. He's got 13 of them things.
All right, I'm getting this that we are over our allotted Formula E time. We were all going to be electric.
Mitch, bro! Anyway. I had to get one in, even though it's a Formula One podcast, because it is Mitch Evans. So let's see what creative way he blows it during the title decider in London this time.
Unfortunately, I think this really shows off how little we really have to talk about from Abu Dhabi. It's a lot of the big stuff around the race, but even we are going to have trouble getting blood from this stone.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I just remember to add the whole idea that we had like a big blow up between George Russell and Max Verstappen, and that was like the
second, footnote.
That was like the second biggest story of the entire weekend, which kind of said it all, given a lot of it was basically a game of he said, she said. But we'll get to
with
that
witnesses.
Another
bit.
With witnesses, you know, stewards and press and all that shit. I'll talk a little bit more about that because I've got some insider information that I don't mind sharing on the pod about how a lot of this broke down, and it's a messy bitch, is what I will say. So we'll talk a lot about
nothing less between those two, best of friends.
Yes, they are frenemies for life. It's going to be it's literally two dumb bitches pointing at each other, going
exactly.
Well, before we get into all of our plugs and stuff, this will be our last time to tell you that if you go to at Motorsport101 on Twitter, at Bad Twitter, whatever you want to call it, this is the last time that you can vote for the 2024 M101 Awards. The show will be sometime in, God, I want to say 2025. Right after the new year?
I reckon probably New Year's Day, around that sort
near
of time.
Near future. Let's go with near future.
I think I'll make a fine New Year special to bring in the new year. If Autosport can do their awards on January 29th, we can do ours on New Year's Day. I don't see the problem. That's public information. That's a joke, okay? Before I know people in the office are going to shit.
I'm not touching that. You can't make me touch that. Places you can find us, of course, on Elon Musk's... Oh, God. Gestures wildly at Sport 101.
Your voice is going, Cam. Do you want me to take this
quickly
from here?
Quickly.
Yes, going. I'll take this from here. Places you can find us, of course, youtube.com/.
That was so with too much confidence.
All the confidence of a mediocre white boy. Classic Cameron Buckley right there.
Absolutely.
youtube.com/motorsport101. facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. If you want to find our personal handles, you can at DreHarrison101, at RJ O'Connell, and at CBuckley917. Take off the numbers for me, and that's all of our usernames on Blue Sky as well. If you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. $10 gets you into the supporters club of our Discord server. You can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. Your final reminder to tell you, you have until this Sunday, the end of this Sunday, December the 15th, if you want to vote on the Motorsport 101 Awards. We can already tell you, we've had a record number of ballots this year, and we still have half the week to go. Thank you so much for everyone who sent in their ballots so far. So much so, I celebrated the occasion with a special event. For the first time ever in the 9 years we've been doing this, I actually publicly put out my entire ballot on the Motorsport 101 website, so you can find the thought process to some of my selections on the website.
Darn it, now we've got to avoid the election, because you're not supposed to...
This is a dreocracy, not a democracy, RJ.
I understand. So this is one of those Baseball Hall of Fame ballots I see.
Yeah, we're all going to go to the pub, and we're all going to have a conversation, and we're going to fill it out together. If it works for Dan Lebatard, it can work for me. Quite frankly. So if you want to see what some of the stuff that I voted for, you can on the website motorsport101.com. Do check it out in the blog section. All of my votes are there. And as Kira quite rightly says in the chat, all hail Judge Dre. Because in Judge Dre land, I am the law. And of course, all that motorsport101.com, as well as a full review of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix and season review content coming very, very soon as well. As well as a fantasy article. Could Marc Marquez win the 2024 MotoGP World Championship? No, but it's fun to think about. All that is there on the site for your reading pleasure. Do check that out if you haven't already. Thank you very much for your continued support. After this quick musical jingle, we'll be back to talk about the Abu Dhabi 2024 Grand Prix.
So we've made it. Final round of the F1 Championship, 24 races down completely, led us to a 21-point battle for the Constructors' Championship of the world. McLaren locked out the front row, and Charles Leclerc, starting from the back after track limits, deleted his time in Q2 alongside a 10-place grid penalty for using more energy stores than it's allowed through the season. You're allowed two. This was number three. In the race itself, Lando Norris comfortably won this from pole position as Max Verstappen set a dive bomb towards second place Oscar Piastri. They crashed and both spun out of turn one. Verstappen got a 10-second time penalty for causing the collision. As mentioned, Norris would go on to dominate the race. He led nearly every lap. Fourth win of the season, despite a furious comeback for Charles Leclerc to finish third and Carlos Sainz finishing second. McLaren did just enough to win their first Constructors' Championship since 1998 by just 14 points. And this time they get to keep it because, by all accounts, if you add up the scores for Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton in 2007, they would have won it comfortably, but...
They would have won it comfortably for Ferrari, you mean?
Yeah. Now,
the entry does say McLaren Mercedes.
What happens when you start peeling the silver paint off?
You get bare carbon fiber.
All I'm saying is Woking didn't have the best quality photocopiers in the office. That might just be all that I'm saying in regards to that.
How long it's been since like McLaren won a constructor's title in Formula One?
One Cameron Buckley.
No, I was there I wasn't cognizant. I don't remember anything, but I've been there.
You know what was there? Goodyear. Goodyear as a tire supplier was there. That was the thing that happened in 1998.
Yeah, that was the first year of the groove tires.
Oh, Jesus. 26 years since McLaren won a constructor's title. It doesn't feel like it's been that long, and it feels like they really should have snuck one of these out of the back door between now and then. They nearly have a couple of times, but it's just not happened until now. Congratulations to the boys in Papaya, the boys and girls over there. Look, I will give them their credit. They survived. And
they won this championship despite their best efforts.
Mm-hmm. Look, I'll put it to you this way. This was a boring race, but that one pit stop in that one-stop race did matter. Like, Norris had a slim lead over Carlos Sainz. Their final pit stop of the year had to be perfect, because if it wasn't, and Sainz got back out in front and won that race of Norris second, Ferrari would have won the Constructors' Championship on countback. It would have been a tie.
And that probably would have been like, we talk about how bad it was that Lando Norris bottled this championship with the fastest car, even though I really thought Verstappen had it under lock and key the whole time. If they bottled this Constructors' Championship,
they were close. Like, it was what, about a second and a half coming out of the pits after that one and only stop that Norris had done? If McLaren had an even dodgy stop, not let alone a bad one, and Sainz gets out in front, that's the Constructors on countback. Ferrari would have had 6 wins to McLaren's 5. They would have won on CB, which would have been, even still, this is still the closest Constructors finish since 2006. And in terms of the 10-point system that we have, not the 25 system we have now, and more points available than ever. So the fact that this came down to 14 in the end, testament to McLaren, who, when they needed to, they clutched it up. Piastri being taken out wasn't his fault at all. Norris brought, that was the real, like, that was the easiest Norris win of the year. Like, Singapore, he binned it a couple of times. That was the first race where Norris really did like he was in control the whole time and just did what he needed and win.
Dare I say
all
it?
All we've asked of Norris since he got here.
Yeah, dare I say it? Is he figuring it out yet?
Well,
might,
maybe. I mean, the objective was pretty simple. Just go and beat the Ferraris. There's no other strategy. There's no other objective here. And he was able to do that. Even pulled away in the last stint. So congratulations. He started from pole, and for once in his life, he didn't botch it.
He's 2 for 11 in his career from starting from P1 and actually leading the second lap. Good for him.
Dre, I want to ask what this says about Ferrari, that they made this so close to begin at all.
You have to give them some credit. I said for Ferrari going into this year that if they were a solid second and have a platform for Hamilton's arrival for 2025, that would be a pretty good season. I think they've actually exceeded expectations a little bit by taking it so close. But I must also admit, it must be frustrating for the Tifosi and frustrating for Maranello to know they came so close. And if it wasn't for the fact that there's two things in this fight that ultimately won it for McLaren over Ferrari. Number one, McLaren's almost bulletproof reliability. They had no DNFs on the year. The only car that didn't finish was one that was taken out by Verstappen in Austria, and technically Lando finished that race because it was past 90% distance. So McLaren had no DNFs on the year. Bulletproof reliability, and two, they're the only team out of the big four all year that didn't make their car worse over the course of the season. Everybody else stumbled over upgrade packages, figuring out their flaws and development stumbles. McLaren, they started out bad, but they got better as the year went on. And once they figured out what their car could do, they didn't deviate. And for the majority of the rest of the season, they were the best car in the field. And they were, and even when Ferrari had its moments where they looked unbeatable, like Austin and Mexico, McLaren had done enough by that point to hold on to it. And Ferrari's going to rue that 2-month spell in the middle of the season when McLaren were arguably at their strongest. And they fumbled it. because
Ferrari were debatably fourth best. It's like they had swapped places. Like, there was a 2-month stretch where Ferrari's car was practically undrivable. They were getting whacked by Red Bull, McLaren, and Mercedes, all in equal parts. And even when they were able to correct course, it wasn't like they had, it wasn't like they swung up to being the best car consistently. It was still every 3 or 4 races they would pull out a win. It would be really peaky. Impressive. They were peaky, and when they troughed into the lower half of the top 10 and didn't really come back up for about 2 months. I mean, it's almost like an inverse of the Mercedes season, where Mercedes understood their car for 2 months and otherwise didn't.
Yeah, and they figured out, oh yeah, when it's hot, we're good. When it's cold, we're good. When it's hot, stay away.
Yeah, awful.
Yeah, it goes to show you the fluid dynamic of this season, where nobody really had it fully figured out for the full season. Like, Red Bull were great to start the year, and then all of a sudden, they very suddenly weren't. McLaren were dreadful. McLaren ended up being the most, like, consistent team over the course of the season, even if they kind of weren't there for the first 5 or 6 rounds.
They were the most consistent car, but failed to maximize it. Ferrari were wildly up and down.
They cash in when they were quick.
But they cash in when they quit. Then when they were quick, sometimes, and that sometimes was almost enough. Red Bull was fighting with one arm tied behind their back, sometimes 1.5, when their car troughed very hard in the third quarter of the season. And Mercedes, you genuinely didn't know what you were going to get session to session, tire set to tire set most weekends.
But that's what kind of made this season as fascinating as it was, because we genuinely went into race weekends week to week not knowing who was going to be out on top. And that's kind of what we want to see as fans, right?
You know, yeah, we went into the season thinking, well, is Red Bull going to match their record from next year? Are we going to get anybody outside the Red Bull camp that we've been
Our prediction at the start of the year had a genuine category of Max Verstappen over or under 19.5 wins.
For the first 2 months, it looked real good.
We were looking solid until Miami. Like,
who is this we?
You were the only one who went under. Don't even try that with me. Okay, we get it.
Exactly.
Well, and again, no one will have expected. Again, McLaren starting off the year with a distant third to fourth best car.
Again.
And jumping the entire queue. Again.
Yeah. It's a weird vibe. It's a weird dynamic. But ultimately, McLaren came out on top. Good for them. Great camaraderie between the Ferrari and McLaren garages as well. They were very sporting about all of this. They were the first to embrace each other in the pit lane after it was all said and done. Congrats to Zach. I have to give him credit where credit is due. I'm not going to pretend like I'm a fan of his, but he's built a well-oiled machine. It's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it's good enough. And it's a damn good car. He's got 2 damn good drivers. He's got a good infrastructure with good people at the top. Andrea Stella, I'm delighted for him. He's one of the good ones in F1. I'm really happy for him that he's got a manufacturer's championship after, I remember Fernando Alonso referenced 2010 and the fact that he came so close with Fernando that year, and talked, and I know Fernando said to him, you know, I hope Abu Dhabi treats you better than it treated me, referencing 2010.
I hope it gives back something from what it stole from us in 2010. Yes, I'm like, you know,
yes. That's nice.
And in this case it did, you know, if I were Fernando Alonso, I simply would have passed a Renault.
Yeah, rather than swear at Vettori, Petrov would tell him he was in pole position, etc. I mean, we got to talk about some of the other stuff that went around on this weekend. I mean, Russell versus Verstappen. I mean, this was
a continuation from
Qatar.
From Qatar, where we thought, you know, well, Max righted the wrong at turn one and was never seen again. So it's done, right? Wrong.
He told Dutch media in Abu Dhabi, yes, but George's a bully. that he brings all this stuff in. He's just a loser. He lies and pastes all kinds of things together that are not true. I only gave my opinion on his behavior with the stewards. He is clearly not into that.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, 4 days later, because this was a post-race press conference and George was not on the podium, he finished in fourth, he wasn't allowed a right to reply. He did on Thursday when he had his own, in the press conference and his own personal media session in a motorhome with Toto Wolff arm over shoulder, and he went into a tirade on Max. It is some of the highlights here, saying, quote, "I find it all quite ironic, considering Saturday night he said he's going to purposely go out of his way to crash into me and, quote, put me on my fucking head in the wall. To question somebody's integrity as a person while saying comments like that the day before, I find very ironic. I'm not going to sit here and accept it. People have been bullied by Max for years now, and you can't question his driving abilities, but he cannot deal with adversity whenever anything has gone against him. Jeddah 21, Brazil 21, he lashes out. Budapest this year, very first race, the car wasn't dominant, crashed into Lewis, slamming his team." And he goes into big detail about how, you know, he thinks Hamilton is this gold standard role model. You know, "I've known him for 12 years. We've had respect for each other beforehand. You know, I don't know why more people don't stand up to him." And of course, Max responded by calling George a backstabber, saying that he's lying. David Croft said on the broadcast on Sky that he had sources from the steward's office, and that apparently George lied about what was said in that steward's office.
Yeah. Now, yeah, multiple people have caught George Russell in 8K.
So I don't know what to even make of this, because this is like so
hilarious.
I called this reheated beef. Like the steak was already well done. You've put it back in the microwave and you've poured ketchup on it. This is not like the 90s.
Get the fuck out of here, Patrick Mahomes.
That's what this was it not?
Donald Trump looking ass.
Is that not what this is, though? Like, reheated beef.
Arby's, we have the leftover beef. First of all, I think it's hilarious. Just everyone, you know, I think George should take time out after the fact to have some of his favorite snack, which of course is Red Bull Side Pod.
Yeah, as someone who is a neutral bystander in this, sorry RJ, I have to say, this is the Spider-Man meme. These are two Spider-Men pointing at each other.
Two dumb bitches going exactly.
That's exactly what this is, because here's the thing, right? For all the criticism you could level at Max Verstappen for his unsavory conduct on track, which is valid.
Of which there are many.
Yeah, no one reasonable is denying that Max has gone over that limit multiple times in his career. George Russell, you could easily accuse of doing the exact same thing himself.
Yeah, but the problem is George Russell is a white meat British baby face.
This is true. And look, I need to point this out. I pointed this out in the article I wrote about it on my website. He's got Mr. Lord in his camp in Mercedes, who's chief communications officer, who's got 25 years of experience in this game. He used to be a journalist himself, used to be a press writer, a copywriter, releasing press releases. That's his game. And they had 4 days to orchestrate a response. All I'm saying is, I think this was very much the plan from George from day one. Go in with this really ruthless statement and try to hit Max where it hurts by throwing the evidence of what people want to hear out there into the atmosphere. Because if you want to punch down Max, you've got two easy targets. One, how 2021 ended. And honestly, I thought that was unsavory, because he said, hey, what would have happened if it went the other way around, moving the goalpost, saying if Verstappen was the victim of Abu Dhabi, he'd be fearing for his life. And I'm like, motherfucker, Michael Massey actually got death threats. That shit's not funny. It's not a joke. It is never okay to threaten the life of an official over a sports event. Grow up. You're a grown man of 26 who represents the Drivers Association.
What if that official does above the Coke?
Well, let's not forget as well, the same head of the Grand Prix Drivers Association also wants it put into law the way that Max drives, that because they like how it looks. It's exciting. It's good hard racing.
George Russell fundamentally doesn't understand racecraft, and yet the first thing he'll do in a steward's office is bitch about getting somebody else a penalty. Now, don't get me wrong. That's the game. I completely understand that that is the game. If I was in a steward's office, I would bitch and moan to get Max a penalty too. He's the threat. That's what any smart person would do. Not disputing that for a minute, right? But own it. Own it. Say
if there is one thing that I do like about Max, it's that he has Frank as Frankenstein, blunt as an atom bomb. He will tell you what he believes to be the truth.
Yeah, he does not care about who he hurts, who he pisses off, or about any sort of bullshit politics. He will just tell you as it is. And it's brunt. It's the stereotypical Dutch sense of humor to be brunt and dry and just come out with it, and he doesn't care if it pisses anybody off. A part of me respects that about Max. I can't lie to you. I don't like Max, but I'm not going to pretend like some quirks of his personality I don't enjoy. It's entertaining. Like, George to me comes across like a high school prefect with a rule book in his pocket. The joke I made about it after Qatar was that he was Randall Weems from Recess. And that's who I think George is. And I think what I'm saying is George is a lot slicker at playing that game than Max is. And I think that's why he ended up writing that very, in my opinion, orchestrated response on Thursday, was because he knew the people would get on his side for it.
Well, because Max has already been determined guilty in the court of the public opinion, basically until further notice.
And there's a grand contingent of people that believe that Lando Norris is not that guy that can get under his skin the way that George Russell can.
He's not going to, because Norris and Verstappen are very close friends. That's people want there to be beef between those two. It's not going to happen. They are too close for that.
I mean, my opinion, personally, the guy that can take it to him is Charles Leclerc, but that's an entirely different discussion.
And when they had reasonably similar equipment in the first half of 2022, Max fried him like Popeye's chicken.
And even when they were on pretty equal terms, they raced each other with respect.
I say, those two race each other with the most respect out of pretty much anyone that does fight with Max, because they know they can trust each other wheel to wheel.
They know they can trust each other to work stiff, to use pro wrestling terminology. They know they could just just hit me harder.
Yeah. People so badly want Russell to be that dude. And look, he's had a very, very good season. We'll talk about it more in a couple of weeks' time when we review the F1 season. But a lot of this is... If you went into this beef almost certainly, in my opinion, having already picked a side, and you were going to entertain what that person was going to tell you, no matter which side of the fence you were on. There is nothing new here. Max is an over-aggressive driver. No shit!
Have you been watching the last 10 years?
Are you new here?
Next year is going to be Max's 10th year in F1.
Fuck off.
This is my last podcast in my early 30s. Can you fucking not?
Yeah, like you turned me into Brian Cox from Succession for a very brief second there.
That's all right. As of the day of recording, the PlayStation Portable turned 20 today, and I felt
my knees
collapse in on themselves.
On the subject of things that also ran a long time, Lewis Hamilton's tenure at Mercedes is over after 12 seasons. Fourth place, punctuated with the pass around the corner that he got passed at to lose the 2021 World Championship. Only this time, it was on his teammate, the aforementioned George Russell. I do got to admit that all the hype about this being Lewis's last weekend at Mercedes did kind of like start leaning towards this is a Lewis Hamilton memorial service.
You know what this was? This was the 2016 World Cup semi-final when the Brazilian team is holding up the Neymar shirt as the national anthems play, thinking the man is dead when he's right there with a minor back injury. That's what this was, okay? And then we all know what happened to Brazil after that, right? They got their asses kicked 7-1. That's what this was. Look, I love Lewis. They so over-egged the pudding on this one. Like,
an endless well of glaze.
Like, the amount of glaze for a man who is going to a better team next year. I just find this, like, I can't help but, like, look, all I'm saying is this, right? If any Hamilton fans out there got a little bit of green envy over Vettel's send-off in 2022, you need not worry. You are fine. Whenever the day this man decides to hang it up, he's going to get the greatest send-off in Formula One history. Do not get it. We're all
going to stop. The problem is, Dre,
yeah,
you know what's going to have to happen before then? We're going to have to see the first "we are checking" hit Team LH.
Oh, it's going to hit like crack. It's going to hit like crack. Look,
Dre, remember?
As someone who enjoys the driving talents of Charles Leclerc, you don't know this pain yet, but you will.
I was also thinking of another example of this sort of thing. Remember when the Chicago White Sox, who used to be good not that long ago, which is crazy, they hauled up an Eloy Jimenez jersey and made a social media post that says, "With us tonight and always." He was just hurt.
I'm sorry, you mentioned the Chicago White Sox, and it's like a wave of death came creeping through my neighborhood.
Only 3 years ago, they were considered contenders for the future with a lot of runway ahead of them. And man, how things have changed baseball. But, like, yeah. The thing is, though, this is one of the guys that's earned a curtain call like this.
He's the one man who would even have a reasonable shot of getting away with this level of fanfare, because Lewis Hamilton is one half of the greatest partnership that Formula One has ever seen. The numbers are obscene. 246 Grand Prix together, 84 wins, 72 pole positions, 153 podium finishes, 14 world championships between driver and manufacturer. It's the greatest partnership in Formula One history. It puts Ferrari and Michaels to shame. It is incredible what those two parties have been able to accomplish together. Hamilton was one thing when he was at McLaren. He was arguably the best driver in the world until 2013 anyway. People looked at him like he was the pound-for-pound king, even at the back end of his McLaren run, when they weren't the dominant force they were when he won those titles. But we saw the real Lewis when he went to Mercedes. We saw Roscoe. We saw the fashion. We saw Hamilton become a Tommy Hilfiger ambassador. He brought his personality and his other passions and culture come to the forefront of F1. We'd never had someone like that at the front of the sport before. I mentioned it before as well. We all know what happened in 2020 when COVID took over the world and George Floyd was murdered. Hamilton became the galvanizing face of the sport when it needed a black voice more than it's ever needed one before, ever. Like, Hamilton is one of the most important F1 drivers we've ever had. And a huge reason he is to this day is because of Mercedes. So all these people that want to come out and say, you know, oh, Mercedes has done Lewis dirty, or that he's been let down by Mercedes over the years, fuck off. I say this with full sincerity.
Congratulations. Without Mercedes, he would have been this era's Jacques Villeneuve.
Mercedes deserve all the flowers in the world for creating their contribution towards the greatest partnership the F1 has ever seen. They built, relatively speaking, one of the greatest F1 cars we've ever seen.
They built at minimum five of the greatest F1 cars we've ever seen.
It's like saying, look, yeah, Lionel Messi's time at FC Barcelona didn't end so great, but to just blow that up and say that the rest of it didn't matter? Nah. No.
It's fundamentally unfair. You do not get to praise one while trying to dismiss or diminish the role of the other. There are 1,000 people in those garages and back at Brackley that have contributed towards this success, and they deserve their flowers too, because they have built some of the most incredible cars and had some of the best operational excellence we've ever seen out of any party in this sport single-handedly. They both deserve their praise.
Remember at the top, this partnership, in the eyes of some, yourself included, was not supposed to work anywhere close to this.
I'll be the first person to admit that I got this wrong. And I'll be the first person to say it. I think I was valid in my point back then in 2012 to think that this was wrong. Mercedes was the fifth best team in 2012. They still had reliability problems. We still didn't know what the upper ceiling of this team could be because we were not fully convinced on Nico Rosberg as a star driver yet. And Michael Schumacher was, shall we say, for lack of a better word, cooked at 42 when his final season took place in Formula One. We didn't know what this team was capable of. We didn't know what the turbo hybrids were going to produce. They produced.
We didn't know that McLaren was going to fall down the Tim Goss rabbit hole and not recover for 8 years.
We just did not know just how dominant a force turbo hybrid era Mercedes was going to be. And it turned into a juggernaut. We had just come off the back of the dominant supposed Red Bull era of the early 2010s.
They made that a footnote. You know, the chassis department at Mercedes got everyone pulling in the same direction in 2013, got a reasonable baseline to work with. And then in 2014, they produce a car that, let's not forget, in Bahrain 2014, they were putting 3 seconds a lap on the field while beating the piss out of each other.
Yeah, that was crazy to think that none of this would have happened if Martin Whitmarsh were simply a little bit more selfish when the what used to be the Honda team really needed engines for 2009.
It's a wild time indeed. And look, the next point I was going to make is quite interesting in the sense of, despite all of what I've just said, it kind of makes the vibes leaving Brackley kind of weird to end this season, because this has probably been, and I'll save some for the review in 2 weeks' time, probably the worst season of Hamilton's career.
George Russell whacked him on the ear for the most part.
19-5 qualifying, 18-6 head-to-head in races, 22-point difference on the year, and that was with two big swings in Hamilton's favor.
And that was with, coming into this season, Mercedes talking up this W15 as built to the exacting specifications of Lewis Hamilton. They came into the year and they were getting curb stomped for the first 3 months. Threw their front wing away. Very interesting front wing. Didn't work. And it seemed to be all right for a couple of races. They put another floor on in Zandvoort and they're lost again. And it's the same story of the last 2 years with Mercedes, where what they see in their simulator and their tools, they put it on track and it doesn't work right.
It's the same calibration issues that have been hitting them for the last 3 years now. And it's shown. And on the year, Russell has had Hamilton's number. I know a lot of people looked at 2022. They looked at a lot of the mitigating circumstances in regards to that season. Hamilton was giving up a lot of his set up time towards trying to figure out why they were porpoising so much. We gave him a pass for that one.
Is that for all that narrative exists, they were doing the same thing on both cars. They were just throwing setups at the wall and seeing what worked. Because that's what you do when you're that lost, when you are 6 to 7 months down the rabbit hole on a blind alley in the wind tunnel.
And you don't need a wind tunnel to see it.
Oh, yes, you do.
Well, apparently you do. And what I was going to say, the difference is that we are so used to Hamilton and the aforementioned GOAT status that he comes with that we've largely given him a benefit of the doubt for all this. This has been the worst year of his career, and he's now going to Ferrari and walking into Charles Leclerc's lion's den, a man who has already broken Carlos Sainz and Sebastian Vettel since he's become the head of the table at that team. Ferrari's tribal chief, so to speak, and he's broken a Hall of Famer in Sebastian Vettel and a Hall of Very Gooder in Carlos Sainz. And, you know, Leclerc wiped the floor with Sainz again this year. Like, This is now a gen, like, I think qualifying might be a genuine problem for Lewis next year now, because he was so off the pace in terms of over a lap. He was 0.4 on average behind George by the end of the season. That's bad. That is a concern. We've destroyed drivers in the past for having that bad a matchup in terms of head-to-head stats. It's not
mostly on midfield teams, because when you're up at the front fighting for wins on a regular basis, the head-to-head stat we measure is like, how many wins do you have? How many points do you have? Although it is curious that, like, we're saying this about the statistical single greatest qualifier in the history of Formula One by pole positions.
Because head-to-head in qualifying, Russell's kind of given it to him over the last couple of years. And that was just Russell being... George Russell was awful in the second half of 2023.
You got to remember, though, like, even when he was at Mercedes... Even when he was at Mercedes in his prime, Valtteri and Nico had their fair share of pole positions.
I'd say Rosberg beat him, and he beat him in qualifying in 2014. And when, yeah. Like, if at nothing else, if Rosberg was going to be off the boil on the weekend, he would still show up and qualify. Even in 2015, when Lewis waxed him on the year.
Nico Rosberg and Valtteri Bottas both legitimately have over 20 pole positions in their own right. Like, they were good enough where on a good day they could beat Lewis straight up over a single lap, right? Lewis wasn't invincible over a single lap. Charles Leclerc is arguably the best qualifier in Formula One. He is the generally regarded speed king.
You always say that, though.
It's going to be a fascinating matchup.
Average starting position on the year? Russell beat him on the year, despite Mercedes' struggles. Russell versus Leclerc. A stat I was not expecting to see until I saw it.
George is a really good qualifier now. He's got very solid one-lap speed.
This was his reputation for most of his 3 years at Williams, though. He was Mr. Saturday at Williams, to the point where we were just like, are we sure this is real? Because it's a one-lap merchant in a lower midfield car.
And yet, despite all of that, it's going to be interesting to see how this all dials up next year, because again, he's going to Ferrari, he's got Charles Leclerc there, and even then on Sunday, what does Hamilton do after being eliminated in Q1, after being hit with a bollard straight out of Mario Kart thanks to Kevin Magnussen?
One last little morsel of terrorism from Kevin Magnussen.
Of course. And what happens? Hamilton drives through the field, finishes fourth, and goes around the outside of George Russell on the final lap of the race at the newly revamped banked Turn 8, thanks Karim Chanhok, to take fourth place. And it means he scored two more points than George Russell in the 3 years they were teammates. They were tied going into that final race in 695. Funny how that turns out.
That's crazy. We had penalties in this race. Obviously, the Verstappen and Piastri clash was the big one.
I think all three early penalties that were given out were harsh. I genuinely do. I think Verstappen and Piastri was the definition of a reputation call. I think Max had every understanding ability to send it at turn one on Oscar. I think that was a viable move. I think Max has actually taken a little bit too much curb and understeered a bit. But I think Piastri absolutely pinched him. I think Piastri pinched him at the apex. And I think the contact was incidental. I don't think it was anything malicious there or any sort of... Yes, you could say that Max was to blame for that incident, but I don't think there was enough predominant blame to give him a 10-second time penalty for it. I mean, look, if that's a 10-second penalty, why wasn't Nico Hülkenberg given one for locking up into Ocon and Colapinto at Qatar a week earlier?
Because my Golden Cock nominee is still continuing to put in that Wilt Chamberlain stat line. They finally hit 100 points in this race. I see the vision with what Max was trying. I do think there was, like, I disagree with the notion of the vortex of danger, although that is definitely a thing that people need to take into consideration more often. But I was fine with him getting a penalty for it, honestly.
I
rare, I know.
You know what my problem is? because the drivers have now asked that 10 seconds is now the baseline for a collision, I think we're now, I think, me personally, if I was a steward, I would have to say that I think you need more apportioned blame if you're going to hit someone with a penalty. 5 seconds, you can have a little bit more of a, okay, we've got to hit somebody with a penalty. Now that it's 10 seconds, I think it now looks twice as bad if it's perceived you've got the call wrong, because the punishment is now more severe. I would, me personally, I need to see more egregiousness for me to go, this is 10 seconds now. Because I don't think what I saw from Max would be a 10-second call. I really don't. I think that was a racing incident you get on a lap one situation. I really do. There was the contact was minimal. I think it was a racing incident.
I think it was an honest to God. Like, I thought there was a gap there. And I think Max just got it wrong rather than this being this egregious dive bomb from a mile back.
Agreed.
But fair enough. Personally, that penalty that Bottas got for tipping Perez around, beehives. Beehives everywhere. I have no idea how that's a penalty, because he had nowhere to go in a wad of cars.
It's a big stack up in a turn 6 and 7. Bottas is going for a lunge up the inside of Perez, and like,
he doesn't, it's not even a lunge up the inside. He tapped him around from the back. He didn't even get to him in that regard.
He was moving at about 14 miles an hour when he spun Perez out there. I mean, like, what's Bottas supposed to do to avoid that one, really? I mean, it's a classic lap one stack up. Would you rather have a Hamilton from 21 where everyone, like in the F1 Academy race, just cuts the final chicane and just doesn't give the time back to avoid an accident? Because, like, I don't think you want that either. I thought it was more of a slam dunk, and then I watched the replay after it happened, and I was like, oh, yeah. No.
Because what sets it up is, I believe it's Magnussen just sending it from about 10 car lengths back on both Bottas and Perez, right? And Bottas is trying to follow Magnussen through. Perez has Leclerc to his outside and Bottas to his inside. And then as they cut, exit the corner, Bottas taps Perez and spins him out. And that's probably his last race at Red Bull done.
Please, please, God, let it end.
45 points in his last 16 races.
It's not sick. Fun for me anymore.
How could this have possibly been fun before?
It's shit. It's multiple, so bad.
Multiple Grand Prix victories, winning races in this car.
Not in this car.
I don't know, man. You tell me. What about Oscar Piastri attempting a bump draft on Franco Colapinto?
I think Colapinto moved in the braking zone, to be honest. And I think he wiggled in that braking zone. And I think Oscar...
I haven't actually seen this one, to be fair, so I will explain.
They only showed the replay once on this one. Oscar does hit the back of Colapinto. I think it ended up being a penalty because Colapinto got a puncher off it. And I think the steward...
Well, then you're punishing on outcome rather than incident.
Yeah, I think if Colapinto's car was able to continue normally, I think Piastri probably gets away with that minor bump. And I also think the mitigating circumstance here is that Colapinto was wiggling in the braking zone. He was moving around a little bit when he hits the brakes, and Piastri's got nowhere to go because he is genuinely quite close to Colapinto. He wasn't trying to pass him. I think Piastri backed out of a potential move, but I think he's been caught out a little bit by Colapinto's braking, and that's what's led to the checkup and the puncture. And again, as Cam quite rightly alludes to, you're punishing based on outcome rather than actual incidents. And that is a problem, because I don't think that's fair, personally.
We get told constantly that that's not how motorsport stewarding works. Well, this year, I don't know how you can maintain that. It's just been... This is one last set of sprinkles on top of the garbage Sunday of motorsports stewarding for 2024. Every series under every organizing body has had some god awful calls.
It ain't great. It ain't great. It's been rough all year. This was one of the less egregious weekends, which kind of says it all. Like, I could see an argument for Max getting penalized for the Piastri spin. I still don't think that's a penalty. I don't think the Bottas incident was a penalty at all. The one where he slammed into the side of Kevin Magnussen, that was a penalty and probably a drive-through, because that was hellaciously bad from Bottas at the end.
What was the penalty given for that one?
10 seconds.
Ah, yes, these two incidents are, yeah, sure. Sure. Okay. Whatever you say, FIA, whatever you say.
Hey,
I'm cooling. I'm over it.
Look, this is not going to be great when Bottas has to take that 5-place grid penalty as an SF1 race, which
is going to be in the year of 2020, never. Because he's almost certainly done. He gone, and it's we'll talk about it more in our season review, but the man described his time at Sauber as, quote, a mistake, which
if I could turn back the clock 3 years, I never would have signed that contract.
He'd have gone to Williams instead.
Well,
which wow. Not great, Bob.
It is great that Gabriel Bortoleto is a Formula 2 champion. I know it's in the most Formula 2 way, because it was Bortoleto versus Isaac Hadjar going in at this almost dead level in the feature race. Hadjar's car stalls off the line, and that effectively decides the championship.
Holy Formula 2 powertrain.
Is that then not the most Formula 2 way that its closest title decider ever would have eventually been settled? There was half a point separating Bortoleto and Hadjar going into that final weekend.
What in the Q-land
is this?
In the 2021 Formula E Championship is this?
Whole powertrain from bolts to the monocoque to the half shafts out to the fucking tires is a boat anchor. Throw them all away.
It's just
that engine
so
is so
bad.
It never used to be this bad.
The clutch is made of toothpicks and chewing gum. This is a spec series. The bare fucking minimum is that the car just works. And this powertrain package has never worked. And we've been using it for 6 years.
It's so bad.
I've had enough talking about F2 powertrain failures.
I feel so bad for Isaac Hadjar, who was denied of at least the opportunity to fight fairly. He was starting third on the grid. Bortoleto was starting second in that feature race. And honestly, Pepe Marti came through so fast, we all got confused for a minute and thought that it was actually Hadjar up into second place. But it turns out he'd stalled and Marti was actually the one in second. It was really, really confusing because Red Bull just painting their liveries all across the F2 grid and they all look virtually the same, even when they're with different teams. It's
brand
really
activation,
weird.
Baby.
Brand activation. But Bortoleto is your F2 champ. He's the fourth driver in the history of the series to double up and take the Formula 3 and Formula 2 crown in back-to-back years. George Russell, Charles Leclerc, and Oscar Piastri, the other three. Congrats to him. It's great to get a Brazilian mutt back on the grid. He's a very talented kid. Yeah. I've said before, I feel kind of bad for him that he's not this big headline winner, because he's only won 3 races in the 2 years he's won those two titles. Because we would normally go nuts if someone had won F3 and F2 back-to-back, and that's not what happened here. Shit's wild. But
would we look at the season differently if the title decider that was heading up dead level going into the final round was Ollie Bearman versus Andrea Antonelli? All the same mechanical problems that we had, if we just had two different people at the top, would we look at it all differently?
Probably, but when you've had those two penciled in for F1 seats since pretty much the start of the year, it's going to take the edge off whatever you get at the front itself.
But that's the thing. This Formula 2 season was supposed to be validation for that. They were supposed to mop the field over.
Well, they didn't, because they had nothing to fight for. We all knew Antonetti was going to be in F1 next year back in April. Ollie Bearman had that one cameo in Saudi Arabia, filling in for Carlos Sainz's blown appendix, and he blew the field away.
You know, if you think about it, McLaren won this Constructors' Championship by one appendix.
Pretty much.
In hindsight, they won it by one appendix.
Dog, that is crazy.
Oh my lord.
That's the problem. Formula 2 is meant to be the series where we evaluate talent and who can get into F1. And Formula 2 had 18 different winners this year.
And not one of them was the one with the most high-level experience on the goddamn grid.
Nope.
32 different drivers took part in at least one Formula 2 race this year. 18 of them won races. 6 of them didn't finish the season.
Which is crazy, because I know some of them got better jobs. Zane Maloney, better job. Franco Colapinto, better job. Taylor Barnard, better job.
Yeah, because now Formula 2 is becoming Formula E and IndyCar's feeder series.
Dennis Hauger, better job.
Is it? It's a weird time to be a Formula 2 fan right now, because it's just everything about this series is up for question. I have no idea how next year is going to go down. You'd like to think
Paul Aaron's favorite. I guarantee you there's going to be a powertrain failure, and it's probably going to be off the line.
Hang on.
I think this engine would be a great candidate to go into a Le Mans prototype.
I'm going to drop this can of monster, and it's going to land on the floor. Shocker! It actually did.
Screw gravity.
No, but it's not an ideal thing. And also,
series and race.
But before we go, I do want to give a salute to the fantastic Alex Jakes, who commentated his final Formula 2 race this weekend. It's actually hard to believe that he's done 10 years of that now, since he took Will Buxton's gig. In 2014, back when he was spending his hobbies rinsing Johnny Cecotto Jr. every other weekend and threatening to go on strike if Sergio Canimasas was still employed. We've come a long way since then.
Yeah, I genuinely thought Buxton was irreplaceable at that job. I thought, who's this guy? And as it turns out, Alex Jakes not only crushed this job, he crushed this job so good he's now the world feed commentator for Formula One.
He takes the F1 TV feed. He's also Channel 4's, uses that feed for the highlights if you're on free-to-air TV. That's a very much real thing there as well. Alex Jakes has been a wonderful, wonderful commentator for many, many years. And this is a compliment. He's the Peter Drury of Formula One at this point. He's a beautiful storyteller. One of my favorite all-time phrases I've ever used to describe commentary was from Mauro Ranallo, who used to do Pride Fighting Championships, did a stint in the WWE as well.
Lots of boxing.
One of the most passionate commentators you'd ever hear. And the phrase that's always stuck with me is that commentary is just the soundtrack to the fight. And that's what Alex Jakes did better than anyone I've ever seen. Full of natural enthusiasm, but also charisma, charm. Yeah, fantastic chemistry with Alex Brundle as well. And as he was, and Joelian Palmer as well, James Hinchcliffe on the F1 TV side. It's a wonderful trio of commentators that they've got over there on F1 TV, as well as an overall just fantastic broadcast package. I don't even mention Ruth Buscombe-Divey and Laura Winter, who are just fantastic presenters in their own right as well. But Jakes has been, for me, the star of that show for years and years and years. He's done a wonderful job hyping up the talent like they deserve to be hyped, but also being a voice of reason, of empathy and compassion when the series has needed it most. When F2 had arguably its darkest hour in the passing of Antoine Hubert over half a decade ago, he was the first voice you heard when the sport came back to race again in Monza, and his eloquent speech to describe the choice that we all have to confront when dealing with tragedy and loss and grief was powerful, it was resonating, and it was exactly what the world needed to hear off the back of something so horrible and tragic. I'm going to badly miss Alex Jakes as Formula 2's main commentator. He's a wonderful, wonderful commentator. And F2's loss is F1 TV's almighty gain. And he's already there as it is, but you can focus on that full time, because he's the perfect man to anchor their broadcast. He's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
I would not have said it any better myself. Trust me. F2 in the COVID year, as silly as it was, Alex Jakes helped make that really, really fun to take in.
But it doesn't matter the sport. Great play-by-play commentary is timeless.
Yeah.
Priceless. And he is going to be excellent on Formula One's broadcast. And plus,
he already is.
You know, on more of it. You know, at least another excuse to not watch the feed that eventually will contain Danica Patrick on a given weekend. If you didn't have an excuse before, you have one now.
All of a sudden, Jensen Button and Nico Rosberg look at each other, and then they stare at the camera.
Now, those normally would be the two dumb bitches going exactly.
Yeah.
But instead, it's the two dumb bitches going exactly about another dumb bitch.
Let me put it to you this way. It is like I mentioned it in my DRR post. I want to hear Nico Rosberg and Danica Patrick have a normal conversation.
Absolutely not.
Just out of curiosity. I'd love to hear how that line of conversation would just go.
Which one has stronger antibodies?
The lizard.
Which one was in a kart racing game about 12 years ago?
Not the one you're thinking.
Do you have any idea how little that narrows it down?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot F1 Race Stars was a thing for a hot second.
Yep.
Or Sega and Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed that Danica as a cameo in that game. As you keep reminding me, O'Connell.
It also had Football Manager as a guy in a suit with a freaking football-shaped helmet.
What a time to be alive. That is it. Yeah. That is the F1 2024 season.
Thank God it's over. 24 races is too many.
It's too fucking many, honestly. Like, look, given that Zandvoort is only going to be on for one more year in 2025, that kind of says to me that given how that went down and the fact that apparently negotiations were, hey, do you want to rotate with Belgium instead? That says to me we're going to get rotation in the next 2 years. Almost certainly. We're going to have
to put in even more dates on the calendar. We are going to push this to 25 come hell or high water.
Look, they can do whatever they want. As long as we don't go to friggin' Hanoi track.
I need to be that guy for a second here. Every major stakeholder I've seen has all said that 24 is the limit. Stefano has said it. Greg Maffei said it when he was CEO of Liberty Media. Everyone is in agreement they don't want more than 24, hence why this rotation is coming into play in the first place.
I hear you,
but unfortunately, you know what they hear? They hear the money talking. And if someone puts up enough money, they're going to say 25 is the limit.
For 26 is the register.
And then once 26 is the limit, we're going to have a really tough time shipping all these cars and people around all year.
Good luck to us all. Right. Season review season will be starting up this time next week. We'll be talking about the 2024 MotoGP season at large and the future of 2025. We're going to try and get that and our Formula One season review out before Christmas, so you can look forward to that as well. And of course, the M101 Awards, you can still vote until this Sunday, the 15th of December. Link is on our Twitter bio, on our website. If you want to see my banner, you can do so in the blog section. Do it right now. You've got until the end of Sunday. That'll be out in the new year. You can look forward to that one as well. But that's about it from us. And so look forward to that next week. Until next time, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cameron Buckley and RJ O'Connor. Thank you very much for listening to Motorsport One. I'll be back next week for our MotoGP season review. Thank you very much for listening. Take care. Goodbye.
Later, y'all.
So does that make this podcast three dumb bitches going exactly?
That's what we've been doing for 9 years already.
It really
I don't know, it depends. You want to talk about coleslaw?
Absolutely not.